Money Radio. Thanks for joining us. Pleasure to welcome Philip K. Howard. He is the author of a bestseller, The Death of Common Sense. He's chair of Common Good, and he's also the author of a brand new book. This one, I think, will also be a bestseller. It's called The Rule of Nobody. The Rule of Nobody, Saving America from Dead Laws and Broken Government. Philip Howard, thank you so much for joining us today.
Nice to be with you.
Saving America from Dead Laws and Broken Government. The basic idea here is that we have a lot of laws that have been on the books, and they're just piling up and really becoming rather overwhelming, right?
Yeah, it's paralyzing the country. It's paralyzed government. It's worse now than it was 10 years ago, and it's going to be worse 5 years from now. And increasingly, it's paralyzing our society. I mean, U.S. now ranks 20th in the world in ease of starting a business. There's so many permits required, so many requirements, many of which are trivial, but it's the law. You know, you get in trouble if you don't do it. So it's really dragging down the whole culture.
Well, why do we have all of these laws, and why is it that they keep growing and growing?
Well, the reason we have the laws is because, you know, generally for well-intended reasons, sometimes for venal reasons, you know, some interest group decides they want to get license laws in there to prevent competition. So there are a lot of laws that look like that too. But one of the worst flaws, there are two main flaws. One of the worst of them is that we don't have any mechanism in our democracy to go back and clean out the obsolete laws or to adapt them to new circumstances. So, you know, Congress passes a statute. I'll give an example, the Special Education Statute, 1975. And before we had the statute, we locked away disabled kids in horrible places like Willowbrook, so the statute was needed. But then the statute's written in a certain way, and it has unintended consequences. And so at this point, 40 years later, special ed now consumes over 25% of the total K-12 budget in America. There's almost nothing for programs for gifted children or for early education. Is that the right balance? Nobody's even asking the question. You know, the law was passed in a certain way, and it kind of took a life of its own, and that's what it's become. It's ballooned into this budget-killing, bureaucratic monster that was initially intended for, you know, perfectly good reasons.
And yet we still need laws. I think that's pretty clear, and frankly, I'm kind of glad that there are some laws. And I'm glad that there are some regulations. I'm glad that somebody actually pays attention to food safety so that I don't get poisoned when I eat a steak. I'm glad that somebody is looking out for special needs kids in education. That's important.
Yeah, sure. And so I'm not calling for the end of laws. In fact, I argue that in a modern a global economy, there's need for more government oversight, not less. I think one of the problems with the Tea Party is that while they're right that government is broken, and indeed it's hard to find a government program that isn't broken, they're wrong in suggesting that the solution is to get rid of government. If the standard for government is to enhance our freedom, it enhances our freedom to be confident when you eat the steak that it's not, you know, that it's not rotten, or that your kids will be taken care of, or your parents in a nursing home will be taken care of by people who meet certain standards. So all of those things enhance freedom. So the need for government oversight is important. But the way we've done government, the way we've created modern government, and this is the second flaw, is that we've tried to create a government that's free of any human error. And we did that by trying to make laws as detailed as possible. So, for example, the Constitution is 10 pages long. It includes lots of general principles like no unreasonable searches and seizures and things like that. The recent Volcker rule to regulate proprietary trading and by banks is 980 pages long. Well, all of regulatory law is now like the Volcker rule, and it's like a migraine headache, and it doesn't work. You can't tell people. You can give people goals, and you can give people principles. Like, you know, if you're a nursing home, You could say, have a home-like setting, respect the dignity of the residents, have nutritious meals, things like that. But if you have 1,000 rules saying things like, food shall be stored not less than 15 centimeters above the floor, warm food shall be not less than 115 degrees, eggs shall be cooked, waste basket. If you have all these detailed rules, they end up being counterproductive because people go through the day with their noses in the rule books instead of taking care of the people. And there have been lots of studies of this. So it's regulatory law serves good purposes, but to varying degrees it has become counterproductive.
But, of course, you mentioned the Volcker Rule, and a situation like that arose from the idea that the banks to be regulated actually messed up so badly that something had to be done, and then a lot of the rules that were written and a lot of what is in those 900 pages dealing with the Volcker Rule and the thousands of pages of Dodd-Frank beyond that were actually written by the banks that were being regulated.
That's absolutely right. And so, and I talk about that in The Rule of Nobody. So one of the biggest, this is not a function of just liberals coming in and trying to micromanage. It's also a function of conservatives trying to micromanage government officials. So the bank lobbyists don't want any government officials to have any discretion. So they try to micromanage exactly what's in the rules so they know exactly what they can do, and they're sitting there basically organizing loopholes. That's what they're doing, they're organizing loopholes. And so you get this labyrinth, which the Volcker Rule is, and instead of a principle that's tied to a goal, then the goal should be no unreasonably risky proprietary trading because we don't want banks to risk their capital, by playing in a casino all day long. Well, that's a perfectly good rule. You can do that on a page. But if you have that page, then you have to leave room for government officials, the bank examiners on the spot, when they're looking at the books every month to say, hey, wait a minute, why are you doing this? They have an argument. They say, well, I don't buy that argument. I think you're just at the casino. And the bank lobbyists didn't want them to have that kind of authority.
So as we look at the rule of law, we've got a couple of core values: protection against arbitrary state action and predictability of legal norms. How do we balance those two?
Well, those are both vital things, but you don't accomplish them with detailed rules. So, for example, if you have so many rules, which we have today, 1,000-page Volcker Rule, 1,000 rules for nursing homes, that sort of thing, no one is in compliance. So every time an inspector comes into a workplace, he can find violations. Every time you go to a nursing home, there's always something, paperwork violations, you name it. People, and so they can just write up tickets. And so you've essentially given arbitrary authority, and you can't even argue back because you're no longer arguing about the goals of right and wrong. Is this a good nursing home? You're not arguing about that. You're arguing about whether you complied with Section 256 V23X, or something. So we have actually given arbitrary authority in the name of taking it away. That's number one. And number two, law is not predictable because no one can know it. Do you know the law?
No.
Do any of your listeners know the law? Of course you don't know the law.
Not even attorneys.
So you end up having this crazy, schools have been crushed by bureaucracy, this crazy culture in which everyone assumes that everything's illegal. So teachers, and you have all these defensiveness kind of ways, so teachers never put an arm around a crying child anymore. Who will protect you? The parents are not allowed to lead field trips. There might be liability. Teachers don't feel they have authority to kick a disruptive kid out of a classroom. There might be, they might be breaking the rule. You have these idiocies of zero tolerance rules where some little first grader gets suspended for 2 weeks because he brought a Cracker Jack toy with a gun, cowboy holding a gun. I mean, literally absurd. I mean, it's like a form of legal mental illness has come over the society as we've tried to create this perfect software program where instead of being free, we just go through the day complying with rules that we can't understand. It's really It's madness.
So with all of that complexity, with the mountains upon mountains of laws, how do we go in and just prune back some of it without having further unintended consequences?
Well, you know, this is not the first time in history this has happened. You can't prune the jungle. That's a fool's errand. You can't go in there with a pair of shears in the Amazon jungle and say, let's make sense of it. And so what happened in the 1950s in America is that a small committee got together and they wrote something called the Uniform Commercial Code. And they created a kind of a set of core principles, it's not very long as laws go, core principles of contract law that then virtually all the states adopted, so that now you could do interstate commerce without having to hire a different set of lawyers in every state, you know, with different laws, because everybody had the same law. And the effect was like replacing a muddy road with a paved highway. It helped create the post-war boom because everybody had the same set of rules. Well, we need to do that for regulatory law across the board, a whole series of commissions, you know, and the point being not to get rid of law, is to make worker safety law, for example, more effective, have nursing home law more effective. Australia, a couple of decades ago, had scandals with their nursing homes. We have terrible nursing homes in America. They replaced their 1,000 rules with 31 general principles. Have a home-like setting, respect the dignity of the residents, things like that. The experts all scoffed. They said, oh, these guys are going to get away with murder. Within a year, all the nursing homes were twice as good, and they've been improving ever since. Why is that? It's not because the regulators gave up authority. They didn't. They still had authority to come in and look at it. But now people are arguing over right and wrong. And when people who work for the nursing homes go to work, they're not going there with their noses in a checklist. They're actually looking residents in the eye and say, what would make you happy today? What makes this a nice place? Let humans actually try to do their jobs and take responsibility. It's a really kind of a fundamental concept in a free society we've lost track of.
But at the same time, there will be some folks who don't try to do their job or have bad intent. So then we get to the idea of crime and punishment. And do we do this? Do we enforce rules with a carrot or a stick?
Well, I think you do both. You try to give people, first you give people, you've got to give people room to achieve their goals in their own way. You know, law is not about telling people how to be right. It's about setting goals and guidelines. Law is like a corral, and within that corral, people should have room to get to the result in their own way. But if people do the wrong thing, and there's a hierarchy for determining that, that's one of the roles of government inspectors and judges and courts, things like that, then they should be accountable. And if there's a dispute, there's a way of resolving those disputes. But at least the dispute in all these cases should be focusing on right and wrong. You know, one of the tragedies of what we've created, this kind of rule-based system, and I argue in The Rule of Nobody, that's now become embedded in the culture, is that we're now training people that their job is just to follow rules. It's not to do what's right. And so there are all these stories where people let people die because the rule says, oh, no, you should call 911. Well, there was a couple of months ago, a lifetime D.C. Parks employee was walking with his daughter, and he had a heart attack. It was right in front of a fire station. The firemen were standing there. She ran over and said, I think my father had a heart attack. Can you please help him? They're first responders. They said, oh, no, the rule is call 911. She said, but he's gasping for breath. She said, no, the rule's 911. So they called 911. 15 minutes later, the ambulance called, and the guy was dead. This really good guy was dead because they followed the rule. Well, I'll give you another story. Hang on,
because we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. And I think we get the idea. There's a lot of stuff going on that just doesn't make common sense. But let's also look at some possible solutions to this. We're talking with Philip K. Howard, the book The Rule of Nobody, Saving America from Dead Laws and Broken Government, The Rule of Nobody by Philip K. Howard. We'll continue in just a moment. Money Money Radio. Thanks for joining us. Our guest today, Philip K. Howard, The Rule of Nobody. That's the new book, The Rule of Nobody, Saving America from Dead Laws and Broken Government. When you say the rule of nobody, I guess if you have all these rules, nobody really is in charge of anything. Nobody has any real responsibility. Nobody has authority. Nobody's getting anything done efficiently and effectively.
Well, who's responsible for the deficit? Nobody. Who's responsible for the fact that we can't rebuild our infrastructure? Nobody. It takes 10 years to get approval, you know, because of all the bureaucracy.
Well, who's responsible for making laws? I think that one I know the answer to. Congress.
Right, and Congress doesn't even have the idea that it's their responsibility for how old laws work. They treat old laws like they're the Ten Commandments or something. You know, it's like the 10 million commandments. And again, every one of them's broken to some degree because the founders made a mistake. You know, they made it hard to pass new laws. So they didn't want too many laws. They had checks and balances and such. They didn't realize that it would be 100 times harder to get rid of old laws. But it's the same process, except now it's got an army of special interests surrounding it. It's so hard to change an old law that even the idea is out of their conception. You know, Nancy Pelosi was on the Jon Stewart show a couple of months ago, and he said, well, geez, wouldn't it be good if government programs actually worked? and she said, oh, that's not our responsibility. you sort of, well, what is your responsibility?
It seems to be their responsibility is to get reelected. They do that by pandering to special interest.
That's right, and that's a problem in our society. And it's a really significant problem that we the citizens are going to have to form a movement that's not a movement to get rid of government. It's a movement to rebuild government in a responsible way. And I think it'll probably require a crisis before we, you know, get there, but it also requires a vision of what it should look like. And it probably requires changing most of the people who are in Congress.
You have some ideas on things that might help in this process. In fact, you're proposing some amendments to the Constitution.
Yes. So I proposed at the end of the book a bill of responsibilities, 5 amendments to the Constitution that would clarify responsibility. So the first of them is that all laws with budgetary impact must sunset. They go away, and they can't be reenacted by Congress until an independent commission has issued a report.
You know that if we sunset legislation, we're going to end up with legislative warfare to reauthorize or then shut down, and then we're left with no rules.
Well, maybe then we've got a dysfunctional government, but right now we've got a dysfunctional government, so I don't think there's much downside.
If we're wasting half
the budget, you know. So.
Yeah. Another idea was executive power of the presidency. We've talked about that in recent months and weeks. It's been in the news. When we see executive power of the presidency, it results in a lawsuit.
Yeah, you're right. It does result in a lawsuit. But, you know, it's interesting. The executive branch, it has too much power when it comes to writing laws and writing regulations, and Congress should have more effective oversight, so I have an amendment on that. But also, the executive branch should have the freedom to manage the branch. And to not spend money that's wasteful, to hire and fire people based on how good a job they do. The civil service system is supposed to be the merit system. It's become the anti-merit system. Mm. You can't fire anybody. And so how can you effectively manage government when the people who are charged with doing the job can just ignore what you say or not do the job? And I could, everybody
yeah.
listening could probably give you examples of that.
Everybody has run into it. You've run smack dab into the rule of nobody. And you've got some interesting ideas in here, Philip. There's just one big problem that I can see, and that is that your ideas are based on common sense.
Well, that is a problem. But, you know, American people fundamentally, I think, are filled with common sense. Yeah, we do have a chance, but it's only when the American people themselves get energized again and stop looking at government is kind of a spectator sport.
The rule of nobody, full of common sense. It'll also make your blood boil just a little bit. The Rule of Nobody by Philip K. Howard. Philip, thank you so much for joining us today.
Very nice to be with you.